My bad. Space heater and fan were both on high, plugged into the same outlet, so.
It's saying the server went down. Does anybody know that password? Because otherwise we can't do any work.
Try password.
Nope.
Try 000000.
No.
Okay, now try 000001.
Okay, I'm not doing every number.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, 49ers 30, New York Giants 12. Before we get into the game, you know what we got to do. Take care of the housekeeping. First things first, follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Nick at Nick Zeraris. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. All right, let's talk about the game. For the listeners out there, we are going to try to make it a habit to do the post-game recaps immediately after the game. That way there's no delays getting them out to you. So here we are, 11:30 on a Thursday night. Absolutely miserable. Let's talk about the game. Weiss, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, nothing really surprised me offensively. I expected the Giants to struggle. They don't have the horses to contain a defensive line like San Francisco. I think that we all came into this understanding that they were going to need a lot of luck to score points. Alarming things on their defense, man. And it starts up front. They're not able to get pressure. That's a problem. When you're not able to get pressure, it's a problem. And I know San Francisco's offensive line has Trent Williams, but you know the other four guys have struggled so far this season. And
the 49ers, two offensive guards going into this game, were two of the worst ranked Pro Football Focus guards on the season so far.
Right. So you needed to be able to get pressure. And I thought at times, I mean, they were able to get it at times, but not at the rate that they should be getting it. There's a lot of resources allocated to this defensive line, money, draft, capital. Like you need this defensive line to make plays. It's supposed to be the strength of this defense. The poor tackling, man, it's especially in the secondary. These guys just didn't look like they wanted to tackle. You saw San Francisco's defense flying around, getting to the football. The Giants secondary, it just looked like they wanted to play flag football or two in touch. I mean, it was pretty pathetic at times. I don't want to question effort, but when I saw some of the stuff, it looked like do these people even want to tackle? It was bad. But all in all, look, the Giants they're not ready to compete with the top of the NFC. San Francisco, I think, is the best team in the NFL. I think they're going to go to the Super Bowl. Purdy. Early on, gave him a lot of opportunities to force turnovers. I think the ball hit the Giants' corners or defenders' hands 3 times on that opening.
I mean,
drive.
I think when the analytics come out after week 3, Brock Purdy is going to be number one, and it won't even be close in turnover worthy throws. I mean, yeah. He was awful, especially
three.
He
had 3 on the first drive.
Yeah,
that hit the Kittle play where he had to essentially be a DB. There was a couple other ones too, where I think if Adoree actually plays the ball, he has a chance at interception and like bounces off Debo's hands. But look, they had opportunities to force turnovers. They couldn't do it. And like I said, man, this team is just not. And then you factor in all the injuries, the lack of depth showed. They're just not ready to compete with San Francisco yet. And that might piss some people off, but that's just the cold, hard truth.
Because we're on this subject about the rest of the NFC. Does the fact they look this bad against the best team in the NFC concern you in terms of where they are in the rankings? Or is it just, you know, San Francisco is the best team, whatever, you're going to have to take your lumps?
Well, week one was absolute shit show, right? But in terms of tonight, to answer your question, I'm not going to say they looked horrendous. I think that there's a lot of alarming things that they have to clean up. Offensively, I expected this. Like, I didn't expect them to be able to score points against San Francisco, given everybody that was out. I didn't. It's not possible. Even if their offensive line was healthy and they had Andrew Thomas, you know, they had Ben Bredesen, I still would have said the Giants need to get forced turnovers on defense, get them in short yardage. They had San Francisco in third and longs multiple times in this game, and they just couldn't get off the field. Like, you ask me, hey, what's the path to victory, right? I tell you, you got to get lucky, you got to force turnovers. It's short field for your offense that's missing a couple of guys. The other thing is going to be you got to get San Francisco in third and long, because that's when Brock Purdy has to drop back to throw. That's when you can know that your defensive line can try to get pressure. they did that. They got him in third and longs. They just couldn't get off the field for whatever reason. So, you know, it's there's a lot of alarming things. I'm not going to say they like they look bad, but I'm not like to me, I'm not like get coming out of this game thinking, you know, does this mean that they can't compete with like the other tiers of the NFC? No, I'm not going to say that. I just it pretty much went how I expected with some alarming things on defense that they really have to clean up.
No, it's all right. I mean, the conversation derailed a bit. I was going to talk about the offense. This is the point that I was trying to make a couple weeks ago when I was talking about resources allocated to the offensive line being concerning. Obviously, you cannot account for injuries, right? What happened to Andrew Thomas? Throw it out the window. He'll be back next week. It's, you know, you can't do anything about it. Injuries happen. But you go into the season with a rookie center who played phenomenally, by the way. The Giants have their center. Like, that's maybe the only bright spot of the game, that and Micah McFadden's effort, but we'll discuss that when we get to the defense. And a right tackle who looked atrocious last year, like really, really bad. So then you go into camp and you know, okay, I've got a rookie center and a struggling right tackle. I need some guards. And I understand that Joe Shane's a little bit cap strapped, but Mark Lewinsky went from taking first team reps all summer, week one and week two, to not even being good enough to start over a guard who hasn't played since COVID became a thing. All right. Ben Bredesen, not it. Izudu.
He's all right. Ben Bredesen's all right.
No, he's not. Izudu.
It's all right.
No. Izudu, listen, kid's being asked a lot. Like, I can't fault him for it. And like any team that loses their left tackle, you're never going to expect, you know, the replacement to come in and be amazing because these guys don't grow on trees. But again, like, it's not just, you know, Andrew Thomas, one injury, and the entire line falls apart. The line isn't good. The line hasn't been good for 12 years. Like, this is a serious problem. And against the creme de la creme of not just the NFC, but the entire NFL, not going to fly. I'm sorry. It's not. So this is, in my eyes, priority number one. Go to the other side of the ball. Those trenches. Absolutely dismal and embarrassing effort. I don't care how good of a run scheming team Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers are. You cannot spend a fifth overall pick on a pass rusher who does not pass rush, who does not generate pressure. Anytime he's getting near the quarterback, it's a coverage sack. He had his first sack of the season today, and it was a coverage sack. Kayvon has looked lost. He's looked awful. He's looked slow. He's looked weak. He got blocked by a tight end last week, Zach Ertz, who was decrepit. I mean, at this point, his wife is probably the best athlete in the family. And it's like, last week we were talking, I was talking about how Kayvon is maybe on the Olivier Vernon arc. He's not even on the Olivier Vernon arc. We're entering B-word territory with him. I mean, I'm being dead serious. Like, he has been a complete zero this year. And it's not like, you know, oh, you know, you talk about like rookies, right? Like, what are the positions we talk about having like that breakout second year? We talk about quarterbacks. Talk about wide receivers, talk about cornerbacks getting more comfortable. Like, this is a dude who is a really good athlete. Like, pass rushers can win on their athleticism. And then as their career goes on, they develop more moves. They become a bit more savvy. He's been a total zero in every aspect of his game so far. Like, we drafted this guy because we know in the NFC East, primarily, you're going up against the Cowboys offensive line, the Eagles offensive line, maybe some, you know, the Giants, who haven't had a good offensive line in 12 years. There's teams around the league who have deconstructed, reconstructed, deconstructed again, and reconstructed again, more than competent offensive lines, right? This is going to be a consistent problem that the Giants face. And they don't even have one edge rusher who's capable of getting pressure. Zero. And they spent a fifth overall pick and a second round pick on Azeez, who can't stay healthy. And then they have the highest non-quarterback cap hit going to Leonard Williams, who, again, he had a sack, roughing the passer, whatever. And then Dexter Lawrence was a no-show this game. Like, these are guys that you're paying to generate pressure. You give a boatload of money to Bobby O, who can't tackle. Like, I do not understand what is going on with the defense. The offensive line, I've stated my problems, my concerns. Like, if we're talking specifically trenches, like, I personally do not believe with how badly this unit has been. We're not even talking about Joe Shane's tenure. We're not even talking about Gettleman's tenure. This goes back to Jerry Reese. With how bad that unit's been, I personally do not believe that enough resources have been allocated to make it a competent unit. And then on the defensive side of the ball, that absolutely has been the case, and guys are no showing. And to be honest, I don't know who that's on.
So 2 points on that. So number one, it's interesting you bring that up about not using enough resources, because Jordan wrote something about this last week, I believe, after the Arizona game, where he mentioned the Giants have taken the most offensive linemen in the top 100 over the last 5 years. It's just none of them have worked. So I think there's a real issue of development and getting guys in a situation to succeed. We talked a lot about the fact that Bobby Johnson's been, what, the seventh offensive line coach in 8 years, something like that, where because they haven't had continuity there, they haven't been able to develop a consistent program for their offensive line. And then in respect to the defense,
can I ask a question? What's the breakdown of those resources being spent?
In terms of what do you mean? The rounds, in terms of the money?
Who's a first round pick? Who's a sixth round pick that you're expecting nothing from?
So because the three first rounders,
Lemieux's a sixth round pick. Bredesen was a late round pick. McKeithen was a fifth or a sixth round pick. I'm sorry, these are depth guys.
They have two top 10 picks or top six, seven picks on their offensive line.
Yeah.
They have a second round pick that it's a rookie this year. This is strictly on development. They've made investments. Like there's one thing with the offensive line.
We know that Andrew Thomas is good. We know at this point, I'm fairly confident saying JMS is good. We did not come into the season thinking that Evan Neal was going to snap his fingers and become anything close to his draft capital. We hoped that at least he would be competent, and we knew the guard play was going to be awful. That's three out of five positions that you're going into the season being like, we're probably fucked, especially if we get injuries.
I think Neal has sort of settled down after that first week. There's still a couple plays a game that he's week one, and at times last year he just didn't look playable. But I think the issue with the Giants is their development. They need to invest in an offensive line coach that can come in and actually develop guys. I made the comparison to Jerome Henderson, if you guys remember a couple weeks ago, like how he was able to manage last year with all the injuries in the secondary. I think the same thing has to be done with the offensive line. They've made investments. Like with the Zudu, this is sort of his rookie year because he missed a lot of time last year. And he was brought in guard, maybe, we'll find him a spot in the interior. Then it's like he's now essentially their swing tackle, right? Because when Thomas is out, he's their left tackle. That they're asking a lot for him. And then Marcus McKeithen, who missed all of last year, this is his rookie season, his only second start. The thing about the offensive line to me is there's two things to look at. Number one, Evan Neal has to get better faster. It can't be.
Anytime he's out there in pass pro, you're allocating a tight end or a running back to help him. Like that's how bad he's been.
He has to get better faster. Now, when you talk to the interior, I'm sort of, I agree with your point a little bit. I think they had to make it, they should have made an investment in the interior of the offensive line, like a big signing. I thought not doing that was sort of a mistake. I think if they would have went out and got paid not like top dollar, like reset the guard market, but you spent some money on a guard, if you want to plug them in at left guard or right guard, I think that would have settled down a lot of the stuff. But when you look at their offensive line right now, like let's say when Andrew Thomas comes back, he's going to be their left tackle. I think you have to find a spot for Zudu, right? Or him or Bredesen, I don't know. And then obviously, JMS and Evan Neal, right tackle. But I think Marcus McKeithen continuing to be a right guard, maybe he can solidify himself and get better as the season goes on. But I think just against elite play, like elite defensive lines, they're going to struggle. Like it's just going to happen. But if they're facing, average, slightly above average defense lines, they will be able to scheme things, and the talent disparity won't be so high. But in terms of resources, I think they've, like Nick said, he pulled up that they've made investments. I think they're just, the development is not there, and that should alarm everyone. Is, hey, we're making investments, we're just not seeing the results.
Sure.
So we'll see what happens the rest of the way. Like when Andrew Thomas comes back, right? Ethan, give me your offensive line. Like, what's your five?
I genuinely don't know. I mean, it's going to be Neal and Thomas at tackle, JMS at center.
Right.
And I mean, yeah, you leave McKeithen at right guard, but then at left guard, you plug Izudu in. Like, again, like we're talking about lack of development for offensive line. It's going to be what, like the third position that Izudu's played in like a season, or few games. Like,
well, that's the thing. Well, what do you do with Josh Azuda? Does he go just, is he just the swing tackle this year? And, you know, that's what he is. That's his role this year. Or,
well, I think we, you know,
I don't know if he's better than
not to burst anyone's bubble, but I'm going to be real shocked if we're not getting push notifications from Dan Duggan and Jordan Ron on tomorrow that Justin Pugh has signed a 1-year deal with the New York Giants.
Well, I think that'll be a depth signing,
if he's your depth, I mean,
well, they don't have depth. That's already been established.
Sure, but like he's better than Lemieux.
Absolutely, and he's better.
So then he's not an NFL player.
No. Yeah, Shane Lemieux just doesn't. He's not.
So then Pugh is going to be your left guard or a right guard.
Well, there's also Ben Bredesen when he comes back in. Azudu.
Yeah,
Glowinski's toast.
Glowinski's gone. Yeah, that doesn't look like he's not going to have a role. But I just think if you're sitting there, like I'm speaking to you sort of like as a psychiatrist, if you're looking for a positive, it's that I think the investments have been made. There are some things to be encouraged. Like McKeithen struggled today, but he looked good last week. So I think that's an encouraging.
The Cardinals, bro.
But no, but here's the thing. The Cardinals had 5 sacks the week before. What I'm saying is the Cardinals are terrible roster.
They were all coverage sacks.
I get what you're saying, but there were no coverage sacks against the Giants. He looked better than Glowinski, right? Marcus McKeithen did.
That's not saying much.
It's not, but tonight I thought, okay, there were times he gave up sacks, but again, this is a rookie player that they're playing who doesn't look as overwhelmed as much as Evan Neal, who was a number 7 pick, looked last year. That's my point. You know, at this point, you just don't want to see these guys look overwhelmed because they're playing their second or third career games, starting their second or third career games. I know they're in year 2, but these guys didn't play at all last year. So just let's continue to play. Let's continue to get more reps. Let's stop moving things around. Maybe it is what's the saying? It's just moving the musical chairs on the Titanic. Maybe it is that. I don't know.
Rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic.
Whatever. Yeah, maybe it is that. But again, they're young players. They don't look as overwhelmed as they should. We've seen offensive linemen look overwhelmed. McKeithen and Azudu don't look like that, even though they're struggling. And you expect them to struggle against elite defensive lines. That's going to be expected. If your measuring stick is that, these guys are not going to meet that, not right now. So,
yeah. All right, let's move on to the rest of the offense. With Saquon out, I thought the running backs were good. Breida had that great run set up by JMS Pancake.
I thought they didn't run the ball enough. That was
but you know what? Like the result's going to be the same. Like they can't run block or pass block against this front seven with this offensive line. It's just not going to happen. You know what? Why waste the down on just to get to 2nd and 9, 2nd and 8 when you can throw it 2 or 3 times?
My counter to that is because your entire game plan is that you can't throw the ball deep. You're doing intermediate stuff. You still got to run the football. You know.
You know what? It worked week 1 before Andrew Thomas got hurt. Like first drive, like they were able to run it. They can't run with this unit. They can't. It's not happening. Without Saquon, like I thought Breida played very well. I thought Gary Brightwell was serviceable. He had a couple nice plays. You know, again, the running back group generally a non-factor, but I wanted to shout out those two guys.
In regards to the pass run mix, there is something to the idea that you need to run every now and then just to stop San Francisco from just swarming you consistently. It's
they don't need to.
Yes, they do.
Nick, generally, Ethan, I always,
you need to run the ball, Ethan.
Especially Ethan, I am always a pass to open up the run guy, but yes, this team too cannot pass the ball well enough to do that. I understand no Saquon makes that almost impossible, but in a game like this where San Francisco has the ball for 3/4 of the game, you only had like 6 drives the entire game.
74 plays for San Francisco, 49 plays for the Giants.
The Giants needed to be, they didn't need to run the ball a lot more, but just a little bit more in there because they couldn't push the ball at all down the field because San Francisco wasn't respecting the run in the slightest.
Brightwell ran 4 times for a total of 5 yards. Daniel Jones ran the ball 2 times for a total of 5 yards. Matt Breida ran the ball 4 times for a total of 17 yards, and 10 of those yards were on the touchdown run in the red zone. They were not getting anything on the ground. They were not going to get anything on the ground if they kept running the ball. I have no issue with the game plan of throwing. None.
I needed more Jones runs, frankly.
Yeah, fine. Without that, Barkley, I'll agree with.
Here's the thing,
Barkley, even, you need Jones using his legs.
when you get in, when you throw on first down and they were getting like those 4 or 5 yard plays, that's second and five, second and six. Those are prime run plays right there. The fact that they were running the ball and they just continue to drop back, like Nick said, you continue to drop back. You can't pass protect. You know, it's much easier for a lineman to push forward than to block, than to get into a pass in and block. So I thought sometimes for your sake of your line, you know, jumbo, run the ball.
Get yourself them, you got to run the ball more.
You had to run the ball. Continuing to drop back into coverage is just not, it's.
Speaking of dropping into coverage, can someone tell me why they keep dropping Kayvon in coverage? Because he has no idea what he's doing. Know. He has no idea what he's doing in pass coverage.
That wasn't a penalty. I actually.
No, it was fucking bullshit.
It wasn't even 5 yards. It was actually 4 yards.
It was four.
We'll talk about, because Ethan said a lot about Kayvon. I don't think Kayvon is a zero. I think he's a good player. I think the problem is they need him to be a great player. Yeah. And that's what he's not. It's not happening yet. Or it's not happening as fast.
What is he right now, Wise?
He's a good player.
No, he's not. Right now, he's a mediocre player.
So what is that? He's an NFL starter. He's an NFL starter. He's not. He hasn't flashed this year.
But last year, there were multiple games.
There were flashes. Yeah.
No. There were multiple games where he had the Washington game where he took over. There was the game against Baltimore where he makes the game-winning strip play on Lamar Jackson. There were a couple of other moments in that Dallas game where he looked very well and very good on Thanksgiving. The problem is they got the doors blown off him. He has had moments. The problem is, like I said, is he's a good player. They just need him to be great. And you're dropping.
They don't need him to be great. They need him to be whatever better than great is. You don't spend. I mean, you and I have spoken about this, and
they need him to be great. He needs to be a great player.
I know, but I'm just, listen. I think he needs to be better than great. I think he needs to be like Giants Hall of Fame great. But like we have been speaking about this for years, probably since we started the podcast, in the NFC East with the offensive lines that the Giants have gone up against over the years. How do you counter that with the pass rush? And the Giants spent fifth overall on a pass rusher whose only sack this year is a covered sack and who generated zero pressures weeks one and two. And that's against a Cardinals team that was letting Josh Dobbs throw the ball. That this is bad. I'm not giving up on him, but
I'm not saying you're wrong. He's not playing. He's not played well. Arizona was a bad game. The week one Dallas game, I can't look at the defense and just analyze. I mean, they were down 16-0 before they touched the ball. You know, like it's tough to like that. They lost that game even before the defense got on the field. But I'm with you. I'm just not with you that he's a zero. I think he's a good player. They just need to be a great player and fast.
This is a question for you off of that. Do you guys think that because the defense as a whole hasn't looked great, the fact that Kayvon isn't flashing seems more glaring? Do you think if the team was playing a little bit better defensively, we wouldn't be having this conversation about where's Kayvon?
Well, there's people that look strictly at sacks. There's people that look strictly at sacks, and those people will look at it and generate whatever opinion they want. To me, he hasn't played well. Like the Arizona game was not a good game for Kayvon Thibodeau. That was not a good game. The issue is that some of the comments he's made, not a smart thing to do. I think there's a better way to address your struggles. But I also think that people look at Micah Parsons and they say, we want that. Where I don't think Kayvon is ever going to reach. Micah Parsons is quite possibly might be the best football player in the NFL. So I don't think Kayvon's ever going to be that. They need him to be great. But as a whole, their defensive line, like Leonard Williams, Ethan brings up his cap hit. I mean, that's not a $30 million player. That's not a $20 million player. Dexter Lawrence, you know, he's great. Don't get me wrong, but they need more. But I go to the fact that they didn't add a third pass rusher as a real head scratching move because O'Shane Zimenez, Jihad Ward, those guys are not capable of getting to the quarterback. They put you.
Well, okay, sure, but like, listen, like we're talking about, you know, the Giants going out and getting a guard, the Giants going out and getting another defensive end. They don't have money. Next year they'll have money.
But they had money to do it.
Yeah, and then they spent it on an average quarterback and bringing back their running back. But
they also spent it on nobody's saying
on a linebacker who's getting flipped in the air by Deebo Samuel.
What I'm saying is that like they spend it on A'shaun Robinson, Raheem Nunez, Roaches.
Yeah, but with the money that you're spending on those guys, you're just getting another Jihad Ward. I think
Justin Houston is would have been good for this team. I think.
I mean, I don't know what he is at this point in his career. I can't fault Joe Shane for giving younger.
No. Here's the thing. The fault, we'll talk about that after the season. What I'm saying is, why I said third pass rusher is so important, is the drop-off can't be that significant. Like I told you guys, Azeez Ojulari isn't a great player. Good player, good pass rusher when he's on the field. But when he's not, like, the drop-off can't be that significant where it shows, where you go from just a good player to that fourth defensive lineman, you just can't even count on him getting to the quarterback.
That's my point. My issue is that when you look at the defensive line, we've spoken ad nauseum about the Leonard Williams problem. Who's getting the double teams on that line? Dexter Lawrence.
Okay. There were a couple times Kayvon got double teamed too on third down. I saw it. It was a tight end help.
Okay, so he's getting chipped by a tight end. He's been manned up by tight ends this season. He is not the alpha of this line. It's Dex. Like, that is straight up. It's Dexter Lawrence. He's an unbelievable player. He's the one that the offensive line's watching the film, and they're like, all right, like, we got to figure out how to stop this guy.
They need more from Kayvon. They need more from Thibodeau. I'm not disagreeing with you.
No, I know.
They need more from. That's the most alarming thing. That is the most alarming thing, is the fact that their defensive line is not getting pressure.
Where are you guys at in terms of the wide receiver use? Because tonight, I feel like they just didn't have more than two receivers on the field a lot of the game. It felt like they had a lot of tight ends out there. I know Wandale only had the one catch. Hyatt didn't have a single target. Paris Campbell, I think, had one catch. Shepard only had a couple snaps. Where are you guys at in this deployment? Because I know Will, in particular, was making a point about this a few weeks ago when we had him on, that they have a lot of guys, but they don't really have roles carved out for any of them yet. And the offense has been kind of disjointed because they've rotated so many different guys in and out at the receiver position.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion on that is that it generally, like, it doesn't matter. Like, they just don't have any good receivers. Like, Jalin Hyatt has the potential to be a very good receiver, but at this point, his play is predicated on the offensive line because he's a deep threat. And if Daniel Jones doesn't have time to, you know, take a 3 or 4 step drop back, set his feet and bomb it, then he's going to be a relatively a non-factor in these game plans, which is unfortunate. It was good to see Wandale's involvement today, first game back. Always been high on him. I've maintained and still maintain.
You have been very high on him. You have been high on him. Yeah.
Yeah. Listen, I think he's a quality slot receiver. Is he ever going to be like the 1,000-yard, 8-touchdown guy? I don't know. But listen, like, Joe Shane in his first draft, like, I don't think he's going for huge risks. Like, Wandale's a safe player. He's got great hands. He's very reliable when he's on the field and he's not hurt. So, like, they have a plan for him. Like, Wandale and Hyatt are, like, the two guys that I'm not worried about. Like, I was never high on Paris Campbell, never understood that signing. Shepard, like, they just brought him back for veteran depth. Like, he's not going to be on the team next year. So, like, overall, it's a below-average group. Like, that's the entire reason late in the offseason they traded that third for Waller. It's, like, the low-risk, high-reward. If he pans out, yeah, he could be, like, a 1,000-yard, 8-touchdown guy. So far, it's not looking like it. But, you know, that's the reason they made that trade.
Yeah, I always say that week one it's tough to even look at week one, but I think what you saw in the second half of week two, albeit against the Cardinals, is that if they can just get, you know, not even average, you know, blocking, if they can just get not disaster blocking, I think the receivers can make plays. Problem is that they're two out of the three games have been, you know, the first one was just a disaster. The second one was, you know, nearly just as bad with San Francisco tonight. And it sucks because they started the season against two of the three elite defensive lines in the league. So it's tough to really get a, you know, understanding on the receivers because you can't throw the ball deep, right? Just couldn't. And then, you know, everything is underneath. And it's like, you know, yeah, there are times when you want Paris Campbell to get more with the ball in his hands. He wasn't able to do that. But yeah, Wandale coming back is, I think, is big. I think, you know, we'll see more as they go through this season. I think that we'll see more of the receivers' roles being, you know, established. But right now, it's they're just trying to get by with
pretty much
very, very handy handcuffed with what they can do with these receivers.
Are you guys worried about Waller?
Yes, I am.
No. He beat the corner on that one deep route, you know, and drew the penalty. The one throw that Jones missed him, he, you know, beat that. I think that was a corner too, or it was a safety. I'm not worried about Waller. I think, you know,
I think Waller looks slow personally.
Teams are doubling him
because they don't have anyone else. But yeah. I'm just saying, like,
they double him and then they say, okay, everyone else, we're going to man up. We're the same. That's what San Francisco did. Double
Waller. Listen, all I'm saying about Waller is, like, when he came here, I was like, okay, like, this is a guy who's going to beat every single linebacker in coverage. And I haven't seen that speed yet. So yeah, I'm a little nervous about the hamstring issue, but listen, hopefully against some worse defenses, he'll pop, but it has not been what I expected so far.
At least he lead the tight ends in yards, right? Entering week two, right? Was that, I think I saw that.
I mean, tight end player on the league was awful week one. Like, I think the leading receiver was like,
well, entering week three.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, week one, definitely, like, Travis Kelce was hurt. Travis Kelce came back week two. He only had like 24 yards or something. Like, it's just been awful. Just the whole position.
Not concerned yet.
I'm getting there.
The recurring question I'm seeing. I keep looking over at Twitter under your question, Ethan, does anyone have questions for us? And that's the recurring theme. Should we be worried? Is it time to hit the panic button?
I'm not hitting the panic button, but I am worried.
You're worried about the injury. That's what you're... You think he's hurt.
Yeah, I think he looks slow. Okay. And what's causing that? Like, it's the nerve issue. So, yeah, I'm a little nervous. Daniel Jones, listen, just...
I think you're being a little too harsh, Ethan.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm not, because I think you, just like the other morons that are jumping down my throat, just ignored...
I'm not jumping down your throat.
I'm in the middle of explaining. You say you're being too harsh. Everyone on Twitter ignored the first half of my tweet. Okay? Like 95% of what's wrong or what has gone wrong with the Giants offense, especially in week one and week three, was not Daniel Jones' fault.
What percentage? The guy has
like 95.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Like, zero time to throw. The offensive line has been awful. But I don't think it's an unrealistic ask of me that when he does have time, my $40 million quarterback hit his players in stride. He was missing throws in the first half against Arizona. He missed Waller on what would have been potentially a game-saving play. I don't know if they would have won, but they were down down 11 when he threw high and behind Waller. He had time on that throw. He absolutely had time on that throw. That's a throw that you need to hit. I'm sorry. Like, I'm allowed to say that. The Daniel Jones defenders were just all over me on Twitter. Get a fucking grip. I prefaced the tweet. The guy doesn't have time. When he has time, I expect him to make a throw that Brock Purdy would have made.
Eric Armstead's tall dude. He had his hands up on that
play
too. I'm just saying. I'm not disagreeing with you. You got to make the throw, but it wasn't as easy of a throw.
I'm not asking the guy to be fucking Superman, right? Like, there are some quarterbacks Lamar or Herbert or Mahomes who can always make something out of nothing. Jones is not that guy. I'm not asking him to be that guy. I'm asking him when he has the nearest, the blitzer was like a full three steps ahead of him when he had his arm cocked back, make a clean throw. Because
there was
this offensive line, those opportunities are few and far between. So the guy that is being paid $40 million, I expect him to make that when the opportunities are there. Because if the Giants are going to have to be conservative, especially on offense, to keep these games close, keep the defense off the field, when that first down's there, it has to happen. Has to. It was a bad throw. Like, anyone should be able to acknowledge that.
The conversation is different now because they gave him money and they have him for at least the next year and 14 weeks.
Well, the conversation is, you know, the movie.
Once you start paying a guy, the standard is different now. It's
but
not
Nick,
just...
It's, you know the movie The Dictator? We're same, but different. This is same, but different. Okay. Before he got paid $40 million, he was a 6 overall pick at quarterback. Like, I expect the 6 overall pick to make those throws. And now I'm especially expecting the 6 overall pick making $40 million a year to make that throw. This is not a crazy ask. I know you're not disagreeing with me.
Yeah.
We're recording after the game. I'm fucking worked up here. Because people are up my ass on Twitter saying that I'm being too harsh on Daniel Jones when I'm basically being the opposite. I'm being incredibly fair.
The standard is a little bit higher for everybody. The team was decent last year, and we all expected them to be, even if they weren't going to win as many games, to show signs of improvement, to not make sloppy mistakes. We're 3 weeks in now, and it's been sloppy. There's a lot of penalties. There's a lot of bad defensive stuff where guys are subbing on and off late, and they're not in position where they need to make plays. The tackling has been god-awful. Those are things that are concerning, that big picture, that based off of last year, shouldn't be happening. It's okay to lose games. They're going to lose to good teams, but the way they're losing is what's concerning.
Yes, because you expect them to at least be competitive for a majority of the game. The tackling is what has me totally perplexed. I don't get it. Like, they have dudes. Xavier McKinney playing himself out of another contract with the Giants. I'm sorry. He's been awful. Bobby O has not looked like he deserved the money. Interior offensive line. Sorry, Leo. Not good. Just generally, the tackling has been awful. The one bright spot, I will say, Trey Hawkins and Deontay Banks, who I hope is okay. He left with an arm injury. They haven't looked too out of place, which is phenomenal for the position that they're playing. The draft capital, especially for Trey Hawkins, like, they've looked really good. I think, like, this week, you know, weeks 1 and 2, I thought they were pretty good. I think today, the only real play that I was able to be like, veteran cornerback probably makes this, is the touchdown that Deontay Banks gave up, where who was it? Bell? I don't even, has like a seventh round
pick. Ronnie Bell, yeah.
Michigan Ronnie Bell.
Right? Like, that's a high pass. He jumped in the air at the corner of the end zone. Like, yeah, veteran cornerback probably like pushes him in the air so his feet don't land in bounds. But like, whatever. Like, I can't get mad at that. Like, it's a learning experience. He's a rookie. I think generally, like, both those cornerbacks have played well, and that makes me happy.
Especially considering they haven't been able to get a pass rush going, and they've been asked to play in coverage for quite a while.
Yep. Agreed.
The problem is the tackling. They can't tackle.
They can't. It's embarrassing.
It takes everything away from it. And it's Hawkins, too. Hawkins doesn't want to tackle either. The secondary not wanting to tackle is just, it's disgusting. But I'm with you. Again, they don't look overwhelmed. You know, like, remember DeAndre Baker, his rookie year? Like, he just didn't look like
Eli Apple for the entirety of his tenure.
Yeah. So these guys, they don't look, you know, overwhelmed. So yeah, it's nice. But with Daniel Jones, I just hate how everyone, he misses a throw and everyone brings up his salary. It's kind of gets annoying.
Well, you've said that in the past.
He missed this throw. It happens. I don't think it's as easy as you think it was after looking at the replay. Did he miss the throw? Yes, Daniel Jones missed the throw, but I just think he's more the quarterback
$40 million that we saw, to make throws that are not the easiest.
He's more the quarterback that we saw in the second half of the Cardinals game, where I think you put the ball in his hands and he can make plays. The problem is he just needs an adequate offensive line. He doesn't need, and there's a lot of quarterbacks that need more than an adequate offensive line. I don't think Daniel Jones needs anything more than an adequate offensive line. He's not asking for elite receiver play. He's able to get the ball out. He can make the throws. He's a big dude. He can run. There isn't a throw I think he can't make. The problem is that they can't block. And when you can't block and the defense can just simply have a four-man rush, play man coverage, and cover everything underneath, you're very limited in what you can do. I thought he moved around in the pocket, tried to extend plays. Just, it wasn't there tonight. And it's unfortunate that the two of their three games were against maybe the two best teams in the NFL. But, and he's dealing with all these injuries, but I think Daniel Jones is more of the quarterback that we saw in the second half against the Cardinals than the quarterback that he, you know, it was has been the rest of the year. It's just unfortunate that it's a very limited in what he can do. I don't know, watching that game, what else could they have done to try to move the football? What else could he have done? Maybe more RPO plays could have been called. Yeah, maybe use his legs more, sure. But it's an unfortunate situation. It sucks. The offensive line is not good. But I'm not going to – I think they can win with this quarterback, what I'm trying to say.
What degree? That's the other question. Because, like, if the goal here is just, you know, tread water year two of this regime, and maybe you sneak in a weak NFC – okay, sure. But more than that, I can't see Jones doing that.
Here's the thing. I don't think one team wins a Super Bowl every year, right? Obviously. But I think this he can be a guy that can take it to the quarterback, take it to the playoffs consistently year after year. I think you look at him, he's got the size, he's got a really good speed, he can move with the football, he can make throws, he's got a good zip on the ball. He missed the throw. All quarterbacks miss throws every single week. I'm not trying to absolve him from blame. He's got to make that throw to Darren Waller. Who knows what happens if he makes that throw? I'm not trying to downplay the significance of it. All I'm saying is this conversation that sucks or this or that or how much money he makes, it's like, listen, at the end of the day, they can win with this guy. It's just a matter of getting adequate offensive line play, league average offensive line play. That's all anybody's asking for. I don't think anyone is asking for them to be the Eagles offensive line or the Cowboys offensive line or what San Francisco was the last couple of years. Nobody's asking that. We just want adequate line play so this guy can drop back to throw, set his feet, hit a receiver 10, 15 yards away and move the ball. That's all we're asking for because he can do that.
Ethan said this on the podcast we recorded on Tuesday with Will. I think a lot of this is just frustration with Jones because the good plays are there. You see a quarterback who is capable of playing at a pretty high level, but it's too inconsistent where he gets to that highest level because you see the glimpses. He was outstanding in the second half of that game against Arizona, but it shouldn't take an entire half for the offense to figure it out if he's as good as he looked. That's what it is. It's not that I think Jones sucks. It's that we're in year five of Daniel Jones, and I still don't know week to week if we're going to get the 25 dropbacks and five scrambles like we got tonight, or if we're going to get what we got against Arizona, where they put the ball in his hands and
what was the difference? What was the difference between Arizona and the other two games outside of the level of opponent? They got adequate line play. I told you guys before the season, and Daniel Jones is not the environment. He's a product of his environment. Majority of the quarterbacks in the NFL are the product of their environment. They are not the environment. Only a few are the actual environment. So what he needs, and I don't think Daniel Jones needs, you know, a top five rushing game, an offense tailored to his marginal strengths. I think you can win with him. The problem is that they can't block. Their game plan was underneath, move the ball. Try to get in a position. He's thrown four interceptions this year. Three of them bounced off. Two of them bounced off Saquon's hands. One of them bounces off Darren Waller's hands. I get it, man. Like, he missed the throw. I get it. But in terms of, like, to me, so much of Daniel Jones, and I'm very happy that I overcame this because I think that I can actually cover him with an objective lens, is so many people are so fixated on their draft takes about him and who drafted him. And everything that went into that. And then the 2 years with Jason Garrett that just looked abysmal and the constant losing and not being able to win and then his injuries, that we're not able to get past that because of that narrative where you see other quarterbacks that are struggling, but because people's draft takes on that specific quarterback was that they expected more, but he hasn't delivered. Like Justin Fields. Look at the conversation with Justin Fields. Everyone's talking about poor coaching. Everyone's saying he should have called out the coaching. Well, if Daniel Jones had called out Jason Garrett, or if he had called out the Giants organization, right, in his second year or third year when everything was spiraling downhill, the reaction would have been so much more different. But because it's Justin Fields and because of the people's opinion of him coming out of Ohio State, it's okay. It's true. And I'm not saying Justin Fields is wrong. He's right. They are not playing to his strengths, but again, it's the narrative that people. Well, no, I we can agree that they're not doing a good job.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Both things can be true.
But the narrative around Justin Fields is compared to Daniel Jones is why when Daniel Jones makes the mistake, the explanation is so much more different and so much more louder than if Justin Fields does it. It all goes back to narrative. This is a narrative driven conversation. With quarterbacks, it's sort of similar to politics, where you're married to one side and you always make excuses for that side, regardless if they do right or wrong. And it's sort of happening with these quarterbacks too. Everyone's got an opinion. We got to have a conversation about Justin Herbert. I don't care how many yards he's throwing for; they're not winning games. What's the problem, right? The conversation is always goes to something else. Daniel Jones has no time to throw the football. I'm sorry if that's not the answer that you want, but that's the reality. In two games, the offensive line has been abysmal. It has been horrendous. And he's doing everything he can. And he missed the throw. I'm sorry. It's my honest opinion. I think they can win with the quarterback. They just got to get, they got to fix what's around them. And I cried myself to sleep when they drafted him. I wanted them to move off him when Joe Shane and Brian Daboll was hired. But I'm sorry. Over the last year, I saw a different Daniel Jones, and I think he's continuing to get, you know, he's gotten better. We can argue about the contract, whether it should have been 35. Yeah,
I mean, listen, when
40.
I got nothing, like Weiss.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about.
No, I know. Just I'm saying reaction. About me. I'm saying me. Like Nick was pointing at me, and I was like, oh, I got nothing. It's because like what you just said was essentially in a very, very passionate way that Daniel Jones is an average to above average quarterback. And I think pretty much everyone here would agree. And if everything around him, not everything, but if more things around him were improved, he could probably take that step to good quarterback. Not
great,
very good.
Great quarterback. Great quarterback.
What are your tiers here? What is there anything above great?
Oh yeah.
How many tiers are above? Give us your tiers.
So there's Patrick Mahomes, right?
Okay, what do you and call then, that tier though?
I mean, that's just the Patrick Mahomes tier.
Call it the GOAT tier.
Yeah, call it the GOAT tier, right? Then right out of him, you got the great quarterbacks. You got Lamar Jackson, you got Joe Burrow.
You can't put no, dude, come on. What? You're putting him in that category?
Who?
Daniel Jones.
No, those are the great quarterbacks.
You just said he has the potential to be a great quarterback.
Yes, he has potential to be a great quarterback. Yes.
What point does potential, you know, he's 26, 27 years. At what point is it not potential anymore?
Well, that's the frustrating thing, is because we've seen the great moments, right? We're not seeing it consistently. Like, you look at Justin Herbert, you look at Lamar Jackson, you look at, you know, Joe Burrow went to the Super Bowl, so I'm not going to put him in there. Like, you look at Dak Prescott. Like,
I don't put Dak in that category.
He was at one point. He might not be. There might be some question.
For maybe like one or two seasons. Fine. For one or two seasons, yeah.
The thing is, their accomplishments are not something that Daniel, like Daniel Jones has won a playoff game. Like that means something.
Wins earn a QB stat. I'm sorry, I can't do
he
the.
Threw for 300 yards. He threw for 300 yards. Rushed for 80 yards in that game. He won
a
game.
Defense for 300 yards.
Vikings defense was like 30 seconds.
Okay, so now we're talking about expectations. Well, what you expected, he did. You expect him to have a great game, right? Gets a sloppy defense. Yes. He did do that. He had a great performance. That's my point. We've seen a lot of quarterbacks, even against shittier defenses in the playoffs. It's their first game. They struggle. All I'm saying is, you ask me at what point is it like he is who he is. That answer is determined on his environment. Like, at what point do we just say Justin Herbert is just a stat padding quarterback that can't win? They can't win. They can't win late games. At what point do we say that?
That's a unique environment, though. That's not just his fault, because you look at the situations and how they keep losing these close games. It's coaching. It's defense. He's putting up 24 to 34 points every week. He is giving his team a chance to win. Yeah, in overtime, you would have liked him to hit one of those throws, get a first down, win the game. That happens, you know. But when you start doing the shtick that Acho does, that he's a social media quarterback, that's ridiculous.
I don't do Herbert, that. I'm not saying.
No,
that.
I'm saying generally the conversation, the narrative around Herbert, around Allen, around Burrow, where so much of the conversation about their ability is tied to the team success. Because ideally, yeah, usually you have a great quarterback, they're usually on a good team. I think you can be a good quarterback on a bad team. It happens from time to time. The Chargers are probably going to win 6 or 7 games at the most, based on the way the first few weeks have gone here. I think Jones, at best, he's an average quarterback who can occasionally flash to that next level, because we're at year 4, year 5. At this point, I don't know if there's any more development you can have there. Maybe he can reach a higher floor, but I don't know about a higher ceiling. I think realistically, you're pretty close to what you are 5, 6 years into the league. That's really the point.
Whether and I will add the caveat, whether that's his fault or not.
Yes.
So what is Josh Allen right now?
I think Josh Allen is better Philip Rivers, where he's going to turn the ball over a lot. He's going to put up a ton of counting stats, and his team is always going to be in the mix, but probably not a great Super Bowl contender anymore. I think the Bills are good. I think there's three or four teams I would take ahead of them in the AFC, partly because of the way Josh Allen plays. And I love Josh Allen. He's really fun to watch, but he has too many mental mistakes. He has too many brain farts to kind of put him into the Mahomes tier. I know everybody was really excited about him coming off the year where him and Mahomes had the crazy divisional round game, but I think realistically, you probably put Burrow ahead of him once Burrow actually gets his half in decent shape and he starts playing better. But I think Josh Allen is, you know,
what's your point about Daniel Jones and the ceiling and the floor and all that is you can't tell the story of Daniel Jones's career. Oh, it's year five, year six, without mentioning the fact that two of his years.
Yeah, no, that's what Ethan just said. It's not
career killing years.
It's all speculation. Like, you know what I call this? This is like the Ryan Tannehill effect. Like he was stuck.
It's not speculation though.
But that was a reality. We're speculating on what his ceiling can be.
Do you think Daniel Jones had a good year last year?
Yes.
Okay. The years prior to that, the 2 years prior to that with Jason Garrett, what did you learn about those years based on what happened last year?
That coaching was a huge issue.
Yeah. Coaching was a huge issue.
We're in agreement on this.
That's not a conversation we were having entering year one of Brian Daboll. The conversation we was having was that he was just as much the problem as Jason Garrett, as Dave Gettleman, as Joe Judge. But what we ended up learning was that, no, this guy can actually be a good quarterback. He just needs the coaching. He didn't have the talent at the time. What I'm telling you is that when you look at the quarterbacks that are not what I just said, Mahomes, and you ask me, can he be a great quarterback? Yes. I look at the throws he can make. I look at his size. I look at his ability to play in big games. Not a lot. It's not a big sample size, but he played some really big games last year, and he can play well.
This is the Ryan Tannehill effect. This is literally Ryan Tannehill effect. Ryan Tannehill was taken eighth overall in 2012 by the Dolphins.
He had some good teams in Miami, by the way.
Huh?
He had some good teams in Miami, by the way.
Not really. And he had probably the worst head coach of that era in Adam Gase. He was the head coach of the offensive coordinator, Gase.
He was the head coach.
Yeah. So he had an awful coaching staff. Everyone thought he was a bust. He went to Tennessee, right? Eighth overall, high pedigree. Everyone's expecting great things from you. Goes to Tennessee. He plays better, but he doesn't jump into that elite tier. That's where I'm sort of afraid that Daniel Jones is heading or could be heading because, like, again, this is how old is he, Nick? 25, 26. It's going to take another year, maybe 2 years to like really like shore up this roster.
Just take the offensive lines to get their head out of their ass.
Because they have too many gaps. Evan Neal is not talented at this point in time. They don't have speculation. He's not. They don't have a talented left guard. They don't have a talented right guard. They probably have a talented center. They definitely have a talented left tackle. They have zero wide receivers. Like, again, by the time this guy's 27, 28, when Ryan Tannehill's going to the Tennessee Titans, he jumps from this guy stinks or has the potential to be average to this guy's good. He has some flashes, but like, I don't know. Like, there's just a lot of questions. I'll pat myself on the back. I really think the Tannehill comparison is accurate based on draft capital, bad situation, you know, not at this point going to a different team, but like at this point, any prediction on Daniel Jones jumping from, yeah, like we saw him be good last year, jumping to that great category where Burrow is, where Lamar is, where Herbert is, like that's pure speculation. And I think there's a lot that needs to happen for that to happen. So whatever, it's a moot point at this point in time because there's very, very little that's going right around him, including the schedule. So whatever, like at this point, it's very tough to blame him. Like, We know that he could be good. We haven't really seen that except for one half of football, and we've played six.
That was a damn good half of football, too.
It was. It was great.
Just an adequate offensive line. That's all I'm asking for. Then you'll see.
There aren't a lot of good ones in the league to begin with, though. That's the other point.
This is awful. This is not even. I just want a league average, man. I'm not asking for anything. Not asking for what Jalen Hurts has.
But that's there's just not a lot of good offensive line.
I mean, think about it. All Dak Prescott needed to win one playoff game was the best offensive line of football, the best running game in the NFL, top 10 defense, and he won you a playoff game.
There you go. You're contradicting your Dak great argument. Right? He's never been great.
Well, I said he was great at one point.
He had that one season where he threw for 4,400 yards, snapped his ankle. He's never been the same.
I have a bunch of questions from Twitter.
Pick the good ones.
They're all kind of indifferent. They all fall into the same kind of categories. It's at what point do we start panicking? At what point do we start having a conversation about this or that? So just the big picture, at what point in the season, what week would you say, if they keep playing like this, is it time to be like, okay, the season's not going the way we planned?
No, I mean, I don't really care.
If they lose week four.
Well, forget it. Like, I don't even care about wins and losses at this point. Listen, like, it's very, very clear that this is a team that's not going anywhere. Like, at this point, they're not making the playoffs. If they make the playoffs, they're not winning a game. Like, this is not a great team. At this point, I will be pushing the panic button at the midway point. If I don't see substantial improvement from Kayvon, I don't see substantial improvement from Evan Neal. I don't see substantial improvement in the entirety of the special teams games, with the exception of the greatest kicker in Giants history. Like, there are plenty of individual players and even units as a whole that you can point out and say, if I don't see improvement, that's when I push the panic button. Because as I've said since the day that Joe Shane was hired, it's about year three, and year three is not going to be successful and not going to be fun unless we see improvement from the high draft capital players and the players that we appropriated a lot of money to that are going to be here past this season. So if those players and those units are not significantly improved to the point where they can at least hang with the type of team that the 49ers are and the Cowboys are and the Eagles are later in the season, I'm going to be pushing the panic button, because that's what I care about at this point. It's individual improvement. I want to know if we have a right tackle. I want to know if, you know, we've got a linebacker that we didn't overpay again. This is the shit that I'm worried about at this point.
They got Seattle at home on Monday night, and then they go at Miami at Buffalo. If they lose to Seattle, I think the season is pretty much done.
The season's done. Like, again, like...
I never thought they were a great team entering the season. I thought they were... Their ceiling was, like I said, was getting back to the divisional round. And I'm not ready to say that they can't reach the divisional round after...
I am ready to say that.
The only thing that I know is that they're not in the class as Dallas, San Francisco, and Philadelphia. That's what I know. That was one of the questions I had, was can they close the gap? And that question has been answered for me. They have not closed the gap. Not yet, at least.
Listen, like, there are some other teams where the season's going off the rails quick, like the Vikings. But, like, are they better than the Packers? Are they better than the Lions? Are they better than...
Atlanta?
Atlanta? Like, dude, Atlanta looks fucking good.
Well, like, they don't play.
Are they better than the Saints? Like, these are all teams that are...
Well, they'll play the Saints late in the year.
But I'm just saying.
Like, I know the Saints are 2-0, but the Saints... I mean, if the Giants play two of the four best teams in the NFL in their first
two weeks. I get it, man. But, like, listen, like, the Packers defense is much improved. Jordan Love is showing that he's, you know, he's...
Just got lit up by Desmond Ritter last week.
He lost by one point against the Atlanta team that we both expected would make the playoffs.
Well, yeah, what I'm telling you is that the things that I've learned so far is that they're not in those elite NFC, they're not in that elite NFC class yet.
And what I'm saying is I don't think that they're even in that tier below.
I don't know the Falcons, the Saints, the Vikings, the Packers, the Lions.
Like, both you and I coming in, like, listen, I was more optimistic than you were. I fucking had them at 11 wins. So, like, at this point in the season, like, not even at this point in the season, at the preseason, when we did our season preview, you know, I think we all pretty much predicted, like, yeah, like, this could be like a 7 seed, right? I don't even think they're that at this point, personally.
Well, I think if they lose to Seattle, then they are not a playoff team.
Okay.
They beat Seattle, then it's a week-to-week league, but that Seattle game is a pretty significant game for this team and what they're going to be this year.
I get it. No, I mean, listen, from a number standpoint, you're absolutely right. Just from what I've seen so far from the team, I'm not optimistic that they're even in that tier.
Do you guys feel that Wink, Kafka, and the coaching staff in general are regressing, or this is just early season woes?
And this is execution, man. The guys can't tackle. I don't know how that's on Wink. Even on that screenplay, they had good coverage. Pinnock just ran right into it. Like, go back and look at the
Jason
play.
Jason Pinnock had might be the worst game he'll ever play.
He ran right into so I think it was Bobby Okereke got blocked. Pinnock ran right into the Okereke's back.
Yeah.
He was an unblocked man, going to make the tackle. He ran right into him. This is execution, man. The players are not executing. Wink is always going to be aggressive. We know that. But to me, this is execution to the fullest on both sides of the ball.
Yep.
What is your ideal skill position setup? Who do you feel most comfortable with in terms of the receivers and tight ends?
Slayton. He's not there yet, so I'm not going to put him in there. Actually, I want to see Jalin Hyatt on the field. And then in the slot, I mean, Paris Campbell right now, but eventually I think Wandale, that's his role.
You think those three with Waller ends up being your most common 13 by the end of the season?
Tough to say with Hyatt, man, because I think we've talked about it. His stat lines are going to be weird. He'll have games where he has zero catches, he'll have games where he has four catches for 100 yards. That's what's going to happen. They want to throw the ball deep. They just can't.
Ethan?
My top three?
Yeah. Who do you feel most comfortable with from this receiver group?
I can't pick Saquon.
That's a fair point. He realistically...
He's a pass catcher.
Is he?
Well... First 2 weeks, he wasn't. More a pass dropper.
If he was a receiver, they would have benched him after the first 2 weeks.
Well, since I can't even use him anyway. I mean, yeah, it's Waller, Hyatt, and Robinson.
All right, that's about it in terms of question, because most of them are all the same kind of when do we hit the panic button, how worried we are. This one's decent. How much longer do you think it takes to close the gap to the good teams in the NFC? Are we talking 1 year? Are we talking 2 years?
I will answer that question at the end of the season. How about that?
Okay.
Not week three.
I was gonna say we'll know by midseason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that goes to my point. That goes to my point.
Ask me Thanksgiving.
Is Kayvon capable of being an alpha pass rusher? Was Bobby Okereke not a complete waste of money? Is Deontay Banks and Trey Hawkins the real deal? Like a lot of if we have answers to those questions, then we'll be able to answer that question. Because then the year three hype train is very much in play.
If the answers to Ethan's questions are yes, the team is going to be a playoff team.
So you still think it's salvageable?
Absolutely. I don't think the NFC is good, man. I really don't.
I don't either. It's just I don't know if the Giants are good at it. But that's the issue.
Here's the thing: 3 weeks into it, they got a tough schedule. I'm not trying to argue that. But 3 weeks into it, they've played the Dallas Cowboys and the San Francisco 49ers. Two teams that if they are in the Super Bowl, none of us are going to be shocked. I picked San Francisco to get to the Super Bowl.
I mean, listen, and not to just be the optimist that I was preseason, but like, Giants were very much in this game for a long time.
It was 17-12 with 8 minutes to go in the third quarter.
Right. Like, it's just, you get into a situation where defense can't tackle. They're on the field for 75% of the game, and that pass rush knows that you're throwing the ball. Like, tough. Real tough.
They need the defense stuff is the alarming part. The offense stuff is they just got to get guys, they got to get Thomas healthy. They got to get Saquon healthy. I think they're a much better offense than what we've seen overall over the first three games.
I mean, it's tough to say anything nice about the defense, but they are still very, very good in the red zone.
I'm very worried about the defense.
They're very good in the red zone.
That many, at one point, the 49ers were 7 of 9 on third down. And with six
including
of them
being, a third and 13, a third and 15. It was bad. Well, and that's on tackling.
I'm very worried about the defense. Very, very worried about the defense. A lot of people point to the offensive line derailing their season. I really do think their defense could derail their season if these guys.
You want to know what's really funny? I predicted that because what did I say in the preseason? I said the Giants are going to be a very fun overs team, at least the first month of the season, because that defense is going to take a little while to gel. And you know what happened week one? Cowboys put up 40 points. Giants, zip, under hits. Week two, we all know what happened. Week three, I think the total for this game was like 43, 43 and a half. Ends on 42 because the Giants can't fucking score. So I'm half right, because it's the defense is what's giving up all the points. It's the offense that's not carrying their weight. So anyway, I thought that was funny.
I'm worried, man. Really worried about the defense. I'm going to go watch The Office, man, and put myself to sleep.
Yep. I'll probably play some Call of Duty and then pass out.
I think I might play some Spades, too. But
there you go.
Lately, the app I play on, guys are very angry when you don't throw them one card that they like. They act like you're supposed to know what cards are in their
hands. Well, you play from like real money or just like an app?
No, it's just the app, Spades app that I play on. You can play other people. So,
gotcha. Fun. All right. We'll be back.
Have a great weekend. You guys, I'm gonna have a great weekend. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great college football weekend. Slate is awesome on Saturday.
The NFL schedule sucks.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
By the way, lost my redraft league because I had Puka and Kyren on my bench.
Oh, can I ask you guys a question? What do you guys think the Bears defensive coordinator did?
Oh, child porn. Allegedly. Sorry, I gotta say allegedly. Yeah.
I don't understand why nobody everyone is like,
oh, Thank you. Dude, NFL insiders went full NHL insider on this one. Like, they just have...
They know it's bad, and they don't want to report it.
Protect the shield.
Between the ESPN not wanting to show Nick Chubb's injury and this stuff, I'm starting to get... Is this state-run media now? Like, is this...
The NFL always has been state-run media.
No,
Weiss, protect the shield.
The media is all... There's a couple of media members that have been leaking stuff about the league. It's just weird now. We're not showing injuries. You know, guys are resigning and there's so much speculation and everyone's like, oh, it's so bad. Nobody's telling me what it is. You know, come on. All we're getting is that the Bears facility was not raided. It's like, okay.
Well, the guy's house was.
Yeah. Like
that was the most embarrassing part about Ian Rappaport's like TV hit.
He was like,
I can confirm that Hallis Hall was not raided. Oh, thanks, Ian. What about the guy's fucking house? Like,
why is he resigning?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Such a joke.
NFL always has been state-run media. They run the tightest ship of all the leagues because they have the TV money.
What about Trayvon Diggs out for the year? That's a big loss, man. Cowboys are going to feel that loss.
Yeah, well, you know what? They got the pass rush to make up for it. So.
Yeah.
When you got corners back there like that, they do, but it hampers. Diggs is the second most important player on the Cowboys outside of Micah Parsons. And CeeDee Lamb.
Yeah, CeeDee.
So, whatever. All right. Well, what are we recording next?
Well, they got Monday Night Football, so we can do any time during the week next week, really.
Okay, so we'll talk to you guys anytime next week then, probably. Yeah,
I need a break from the Giants, man. I feel like the season has already been like 3 months.
Dude, listen, Sunday, I think it's going to be nice. Oh, shit, it actually might not be nice weather on Sunday.
It's getting like a big ass rainstorm.
All right, you gotta do the mad dog. You go get yourself a cocktail. You cut your gum
in half. Yep.
Yeah. Throw 10 dimes on Colorado and you see what happens.
Light a candle, put the sweats on, get on the couch. Red zone. You don't have to worry about the Giants. It's gonna be a great Sunday.
I'm Colorado'd up. Still rooting for them, but like, same. I think it's just getting too much.
Agreed.
That Colorado State game told me that this team is
always fraudulent. They play nobodies. Oregon's going to win by 50.
Wait till Drake shows up on the sideline, then the season will be over. That's the telltale sign of when the team jumps the shark is when Drake is on the sideline.
Oh, yeah.
The thing is, I was like, they're a Bahamas Bowl team. Like, they'll play. They're like they're going to finish like 6-6 or something like that and play in the Bahamas Bowl. Call it a day.
Yeah, that's incredible. All right, we'll wrap it up. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace.